Welcome to Syncopate. I'm Dr. Michelle S. Johnson, aka DJ Disobedience. This documentary series pursues the syncopation of culture, that groove just on the other side of the beat, and brings together education, social science, arts, culture, history, science, and cultural production. It'll bring in health, humanities, philosophy, and people's lives. Each show starts with a curiosity I have about a cultural expression. As I've traveled paths of thought and land, I still wonder about aspects of American Black history, especially in the Midwest. Whether it's from the perspective of a DJ, an American culture PhD, or the kid who just loves social studies and now knows about Zora Neale Hurston, listeners can pop in on instructive conversations about Black movements and spaces, especially in Michigan. I most always start with my very cool and knowledgeable friends and family. My people are variously degreed, informally and informally trained in the ways of the world. Welcome to our side of the beat. My path of curiosity and storytelling is a long and complicated one, from my earliest homes in Kalamazoo, Chicago, and Saginaw to this computer and microphone. I laid stepstones with the first Panasonic tape recorder when I was 9 or 10 and formalized my interest over the years visiting libraries, archives, kitchen tables, and porches, especially in Michigan, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and following Zora Neale Hurston's geographic and cultural maps in Florida. In Syncopate's Raising Hay and Planting Roots, Black farmers in Kalamazoo, Cass, and Van Buren counties, each episode shows how family story frames Black environmental culture with the history of Black agricultural land ownership, art, oral history, and current cultural movements. Raising Hay especially digs through layers of pride and the challenges of Black farmers and rural residents who owned or have agricultural enterprises. In four episodes, we will explore the life and art of four Black women artists, Lindsay Kelly, Selena Johnson, Heather Mitchell, and Remy Harrington, as they reveal the links between creativity, identity, land, farming, and legacy. These moments piece together before, during, and since the massive pandemic in broad-based Black activism in the United States seem even more relevant as we recall what is deemed essential and our narrator's insight on environmental culture, ancestry, retention, loss, and restoration. An Afrofuturistic truth, the vital juice of our Black creative power rests between the layered and rich past and the sustainable actions and visions of our future. The Black Power movement of the late teens and early 20s of this century show how Black people more deeply value the roots and power of land, Black economy, and culture. Shapers of this local and national movement centralized conversations about generational wealth, reparations, safe space, healing, and knowing history as methods of racial justice. Organizers and scholars and activists have presented multiple ways to repair hundreds of years of ongoing disparity and harm that would restore Black rural and urban property, manipulated through inequities of finance, zoning, and infrastructure. In August of 2020, Kalamazoo County resolved to form a Commission of Economic Reparations and Opportunity for descendants of enslaved Africans and Indigenous Blacks. Healing in a County Plan would partner with Indigenous communities and consider the benefits of safe, secure, and ancestral space and the methods of impact of attacks against those experiences.
My name is Selena, S-A-L-I-N-A Johnson. I was born in Munich in Germany on a U.S. military base. My mother and my father were in the military. I was born about 2.5 to 3 years into my mom's four-year tour. My mom rented a house off of M43, about 5 miles from South Haven, when I was 8. And shortly thereafter, my grandfather bought all of the property that was surrounding that house and built another house for him and my grandma on the other side of it, and then started farming that land. So we had hogs that we raised mostly for sale, but, you know, we would keep one, you know, for personal. We had chickens. There were a lot of natural fruit resources that were already on the land that he didn't necessarily tend, but we had blueberries. There were a few apple trees, a few peach trees. We had raspberries, blackberries, strawberries. Those just kind of grew wild. But we would pick them, you know, in the summer and just have them. You know, we never sold any of that kind of stuff. But I remember we would get, like, random people would drop off random cases of stuff. I remember in particular we had these flats of spoiled yogurt that we had to feed to the hogs. I remember that. But, and they were dangerous animals. You know, we were allowed to feed, but if one got out, we had to get in the house, and my grandpa would get his gun and go out and, you know, around a few neighbors and try to corral them and get them back in the pen because they were very dangerous animals. It was a humbling experience. Both my grandparents lived through a depression, and, you know, so I grew up with a very waste not, want not lifestyle. My grandmother canned. You know, we never went without food. Both my grandparents were from Arkansas, so very southern, traditional southern dishes, sweet potatoes, greens, all kinds of beans, butter beans, black-eyed peas, navy beans, snapping peas. My grandpa had this great big tiller that he pulled behind the tractor, and he would till up the land, and we did everything from seed. So it would be green beans, corn, we had watermelons, all kinds of squash, zucchini, cucumbers, pumpkins. We had everything, and we just grew it. And like I said, we didn't really sell any of that. It was just for the family, you know, and he really enjoyed doing it. He did it up until he couldn't be out there anymore. And it was 80s. Yeah, I have a picture of him and my oldest son and my pastor out picking beans, and him yelling at Torrance, "Stay on your line. He's going to finish the whole line before you move to the next one to make sure you get all the beans. Otherwise, they'll rot." You know, and he'd teach us about not playing out there, you know, not to disturb the crop. Because we had all this land we could be in. Why would we be running through that? Well, we were kids. I mean, why wouldn't we be running through that? It looks cool over here. You know, it's all uniform and lined up. But we would go out with great big old buckets and pick the beans. We learned about, like, the zucchinis and cucumbers, pumpkins, squash, stuff like that. They're not ready until they fall off the vine. So if you gotta pull them off, they're not ripe. You know, a lot of people don't know that kind of stuff. Just little tidbits, stuff like that. He would grow greens, collard greens, mustard greens, turnip greens. And those are literally just big leaves that come out of the ground, and they're very dirty. So you gotta clean them well. Cabbage, we had all kinds of stuff. It was all fresh, you know, just the taste of it, and almost like you could taste the hard work that was put into it. But we'd pick it, and we sit on the front porch, and, you know, my grandma would show us how to, you know, snap the peas or, you know, prep it or whatever before we washed it. So blueberries, because they have orange in them. You shouldn't eat blueberries off the bush. You get very sick. So she'd fill up the sink and pour them in there, and the ones that weren't ripe would float to the top, and any bugs or leaves or whatever, and then you got clean berries that you can eat.
And it wasn't after I got older and started to look around for things. It was before I even knew. My favorite thing that I've written has to be about this favorite old lady of mine. Grandma's hand clapped in church on Sunday morning. Grandma's hands played a tambourine so well. Grandma's hands used to issue out a warning. She'd say, "Billy, don't you run so fast. Might fall on a piece of glass. Might be snakes there in that grass." Grandma's hand.
You mentioned mentioned, you said your Uncle Daniel that lived next door, was it?
My Uncle Tim.
The Uncle Tim next door. So there's two things. How much acreage did your grandparents have? And how were your other family members engaged in farming as well?
I don't think my Uncle Tim really did any of it. So there's two houses and there's a garage in the middle. And I'm not sure on the exact acreage, but there's like the driveway, the houses, the garage, and then there's a lot of land on either side. And they're pretty, like, he owns quite a bit of land out there. And then it goes pretty far back. There's a creek that runs through it. That's a big plot of land. That's just one of the plots that he owned. He has a plot in two plots in Bangor that he owns as well. One of them my aunt lives on in the home he purchased for her. She's hard of hearing, so she's never been able to work, fully disabled. And so he always provided a vehicle and a home for her, and he just asked her to pay the taxes, property taxes on the house, a part of her disability. And then the other property, the city is still trying to steal from him.
Tell me about that.
So we called it the Blue House. That was the house they originally lived in when they moved to Bangor, and it's 200 Cemetery Road in Bangor, Michigan. And it was a big house. We've all lived there at some point. I lived there with my mom, with them. When my grandma had hip surgery, she was 55. And we were there, you know, and her room was big enough for a hospital bed in there. And then there was like a little, it was her closet when they lived there, but my aunt turned it into a bedroom when she moved in there, but it had a big dining room, kitchen, bathroom, or living room, dining rooms over here. And then upstairs there were two bedrooms, huge, like master bedroom upstairs with a closet, and then a smaller bedroom with a closet, and an open stairway with no railing. That thing was so dangerous. I said, how did this even pass code? Like, it was so dangerous. I remember like so many near-death experiences, like almost falling over the steps because there was no railing there. Like, why would you let this happen? Why would you let this be there? Like, what? Yeah. But we, you know, they owned that property as long as he lived in Michigan, and there were walnut trees. And the big old, you know, look like tennis balls would come down all the time. And when I lived there, I didn't really do any farming there.
So what was the agricultural background or the farming or gardening background that your grandparents came from before they got here to Michigan?
My grandparents grew up picking cotton.
In Arkansas?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you know about any of...
As far as I know, you know, my grandpa, I had to do a story on him about living through the Great Depression. And he said that they got through, you know, by providing for themselves. And they had the neighborhood mentality that if the neighbor had, then they had. So, you know, I think primarily they got into it for survival. And, you know, he just really enjoyed it because there wasn't... It wasn't a necessity. I mean, he retired at 60 and was retired until he died at 88. So financially, it wasn't, you know, a necessity for him to do that for any sort of profit. I just think he really enjoyed the work.
Now, he'd been involved as in agricultural labor in Arkansas, but had they been growing things and gardening?
I don't think so. I think it was literally just, you know, for their own purposes, you know, mm-hmm. Like I said, my grandma canned and stuff like that. And I think it was just, this is how we do things, you know, this is how we get through. The economy is so bad.
In times like these, we're all climbing up the mountains of life. You see, sickness is a mountain. Unemployment is a mountain. The world crisis is a mountain. But I'd like to make a parable of these mountains today. You see, I'd rather climb up the rough side of the mountain than the smooth side. For if I climb up the smooth side of the mountain, my foot just may slip.
We've had a garden a couple times. We had a little success the first year. You know, I went out there and tilled everything up and planted myself and just kind of had them help, you know, help me water it and tend to it kind of a thing. But the second year, we did a bigger plot and put in all this effort, and then they just both left for the summer. And I'm like, I can't take this big old garden by myself. But I definitely appreciate the work that goes into it. We eat very healthy. We try to, you know, we visit the farmer's market quite a bit. We eat a lot of produce. I prepare a lot of my meals myself. You know, try to stay away from the processed foods. Just as, you know, my grandma, she cooked everything. She made everything. And, you know, we'll go out to eat on occasion. But just having that appreciation for this came from outside. I would go and pick kale out of my garden for a fresh salad. And it's like, I made this. You know, that sense of accomplishment, and it just tastes better. It affects the way I shop. There's a lot of meat products I don't buy, or won't buy meat at certain places. You know, I look at things a lot differently. I'd be like, do you see how yellow that is? Look at the fleshy color of that chicken. And people would be like, I'm crazy. You know, people are excited about this early spring. I was like, this isn't good for the farmers. If it gets too warm, it affects the buds, and it just, you know, it's not something normal people think about, but, you know, that's ingrained in me that it's too early to get warm. Things like that. I still get up with the chickens every day. Can't sleep in if I try. Sun's up, it's time to go to work. Because that's how I was raised. You know, the sun's up. We got work to do. You know, my oldest son has definitely picked up on that concept. He doesn't mind working hard or helping people. You know, my parents or my grandparents were both caretakers in their own rights. My grandma was my grandfather's literal right hand. Like, when she passed, we had to teach him how to use the washing machine. You know, this is a man that worked for a nuclear plant and 22 years in the military, but he never had to worry about any of that stuff. I remember taking him to dry cleaners. He didn't know. He's like, I need my suits clean. How do I do this? You know, ended up becoming bonding moments for us, but that caretaker piece, you know, people are like, you're just like Miss Daisy, you're just like your grandma, you know, you're always taking care of someone. And, you know, they took us in when our, you know, parents were faltering. They took us in and, you know, didn't let us fall by the wayside. They were just like, this is our responsibility, you know, and it wasn't, but, and I do it now. I've taken in all kinds of strays and I really appreciate having that. It is a different perspective, and it's lonely in its own rights because I haven't come across a lot of people like myself. You know, when you wonder where you fit in, and, you know, like I said with the birthday thing, I'm the planner, I'm the caretaker. And so when you don't encounter people like that, it's not reciprocated a lot, and it does hurt. And then you remind yourself that that's not who they are, and you don't let it change who you are. So it's just, it's a very humbling experience. You know, the only detriment I think I've gotten from it is, they were very, you don't waste anything. And so I've accumulated so much stuff because somebody might need it. Lord have mercy. If I throw away that plastic bag or that rubber band and somebody needs it, the world will end, I'm sure of it. I still tell people that, you know, my grandma always say the house needs to be clean because you don't know if the president might stop by. And they just think that's the funniest thing. But that was a reality for us growing up. You know, they were Southern people, and that was something that happened in their day. Just tidbits of things like that. And, you know, people find it funny that I like to go to the gun range. I've had a gun in my hand since I was 9 years old. You know, ain't no thing. We were taught, these aren't toys. You don't play with them. This is how you use it properly. That was the end of the conversation. So it's interesting. Very interesting.
How do you think it connects to your creativity?
I think it shapes a lot of, like, when I actually get a minute to sit down and think. My grandma was a prankster, a jokester, just a great humorous personality. And I think I get a lot of that quick wit from her. That combined with just having such a worldly experience. you know, being exposed to so many different things, and you know, it opens me up to connect with different people on so many different levels because I have such a diverse background, you know, and I think that's why I attract so many different kinds of people. You know, I have friends at all levels, and you know, it even amazes me sometimes. It's like, man, this is really cool. Like, you know, I'm friends with this person or that person, and you know, those connections are really important to me. And you know, I think that's something that my grandma kind of missed out on. She didn't really have her own set of friends. You know, my grandfather was a Mason and she was an Eastern Star. And so she developed that network where they would travel together and couples like that. But, you know, she never was like, oh, I'm going shopping with my girlfriend. You know, she didn't really have that aspect. So I think her family was at peace for her. And, you know, I think I'm a lot like her in that way where I get tired of people. I'm just like, okay, I've had enough. This is a lot. You know, she was very quiet, you know, to herself. And as a mother myself now, I see she valued that time of peace. You know, she would get irritated when I would get up early in the morning because that was her time to have her coffee and be by herself and just have nobody to worry about for that moment. She taught me to be calm in the time of chaos. We had a tornado down the street, not a warning, an actual tornado. And I remember it popped up and I was like, what do we do? And she said, what can we do? And she went back to sleep. And I was like, we're gonna die. We're all gonna die. We're gonna die here, you know? And still to this day, I tell that story and I was like, that's the greatest lesson in my life. What can we do? You know, and there was nothing we could do about that. And so when I encounter things like that, I can't do anything about it, I don't sweat it. People say, I don't know how you do it. What can I do about it? That kind of stuff ages you. And I'm like, I'm trying to stay young, you know, so.
Why is it important, or is it important, mm-hmm. for Black people to have land to be able to grow food for themselves and others?
I think so much has been stripped from us. Ideas, land, our personalities, you know, anything that they could change and conform, they try to. And so I think it's really important that we hold on to whatever we can. My grandpa, part of what he put in his trust was enough money to pay the property taxes on that in case we can't afford it, because that's his legacy. That's our legacy. That's Johnson family land, you know, and so much of it was stolen. And, you know, we're fortunate. I have pictures of my great grandparents. You know, my grandpa did the DNA test. I know where I came from. I know who my people are. We're fortunate to be affluent enough to have that, you know, and I know that that's a privilege. You know, that's not afforded to a lot of other Black people. We're very close. Like, I know all my cousins of my, you know, grandparents, siblings, kids. Like, we are a close-knit family. You know, they made that such an important thing. We traveled. He had this huge address book with phone numbers and addresses of people all over the country. You know, we'd have family reunions and they'd come out and we had all this land for them to sleep on and eat on. And it's like, hey, try this watermelon I grew. You know, my grandpa was so proud of his legacy that he put together. Like, look what I did. Look where I came from. Look where I'm at now. But he didn't flaunt it. It was just a natural role. You know, you could see it in them. And it's so important to keep that going. You know, I joked about Microsoft being racist because I'm typing up, you know, these emails and Genie don't come up with a spell check and these other names. I'm like, how is this any more common than Lakeisha? The hell? Why is my name gotta be spell checked? Genie? What is that? It's not even a real name. You know, there's so much of us that they just wanted to conform and change. And, you know, starting at home, literally, where we can cultivate and create allows us to continue to be ourselves. This is where we came from. These are our roots. You know, it's very important.
Lift every voice and sing till earth and heaven ring. Ring with the harmonies of liberty. Let our rejoicing rise high as the listening sky.
Thanks for listening in on our syncopate conversation with Selena Johnson. You can hear other parts of the series on WMBM Radio on Live 365 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday at 7 p.m. for the month of July, and starting in August on Podbean. The intro music is by CC Beats, an LA artist and one-time Kalamazoo and Fire and Historical and Cultural Arts film and videography staff. Selena Johnson curated and co-curated the musical selection of Bill Withers' Grandma's Hands and The Rough Side of the Mountain by Dorothy Norwood and Lift Every Voice by June's Diary. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to Syncopate, the groove just on the other side of the beat. I'm DJ Disobedience, aka Dr. Michelle S. Johnson. We hope your landscape looks richer with Black history and your commitment to restoring Black spaces is deepened. Let Black joy become your anthem and fill the space around you. I'd like to thank C3 Media and Production, Creative Visual and Audio Storytelling, RB Productions, WMBM Radio, and the Arts Council of Kalamazoo for their generous support of this project. Music is by CC Beats, an LA artist and one-time Kalamazoo and Fire and Historical and Cultural Arts film and videography staff.